It's 7 minutes past 10. I'm Kara Lawrence, and I'm really looking forward to this hour with two stars of Million Dollar Quartet at Farmers Alley Theater, along with Deputy Director Rob Weiner. Thank you all for being here, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Kara.
Happy to be here.
Okay. We'll be talking to actors Scott Moreau and Nat Zagree in just a moment, but I'm going to start with you, Rob Weiner, and ask you about the season so far and the run of this particular show, Million Dollar Quartet.
Yeah, a pleasure as always to be here, Kara. Thank you so much for having us. This season for Farmers Alley Theater started out with a big bang. We did the musical classic 1776, which was wildly timely and likewise very popular. So we had a great run, and that show was one of our most successful openers of all time, looking back at the forefathers, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and their construction of the Constitution. And I think people really, really responded to that at this time. And we put a couple of modern spins, some references to the current political state that we're sort of wading through right now.
You had some unexpected twists with the run.
We had an actor who, our lead actor John Adams, who lost his voice.
Irreplaceable.
We had to cancel a performance for the first time in Farmers Alley Theater history, but our patrons were very understanding, and we were so popular that we were able to extend and add performances, so everyone who wanted to see that show was able to. And then we just finished wrapping up the Pulitzer Prize winning drama Disgraced, which was an amazingly powerful show written by Ayad Akhtar about the Muslim experience sort of nowadays. And that performance, that production run, was extremely interesting because our first weekend occurred before the election. Then the election was on Tuesday and the second weekend occurred. And so the audiences really had different things to think about and consider both weekends. We did some talkbacks after the show where people really were able to converse with the actors, and we had some scholars from Western Michigan and K College in religious studies. And so that was a real wonderful conversation piece. But we need to sort of get away from all of that politics and hard thinking and important questions that we're all asking. We're really excited to do a show of just magnificent entertainment when we open up Million Dollar Quartet on December 2nd and run basically through the month of December. We're looking for escapism and some great music and amazingly talented performers. We've got two of them here in studio with you today, eight in total in the whole cast. And I think I was at rehearsal last night, and we're rehearsing over at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive because that's where we'll be performing the show. And we're just saying, we hope the roof is still going to be there on December 2nd because these guys, they're all musicians. They're all incredibly talented singers and sort of not imitators, but really capture the sense and the spirit of these four music legends: Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins.
So I remember you telling me that the whole basis of the show is based on a true story, an actual date in history. And we're about to hit the anniversary of that date in history.
And I'm sure that Scott and Nat will be able to fill you in more about that. But yeah, this one night, December 4th, 1956, at Sun Record Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, these four music giants, they weren't necessarily all giants at the time.
Right.
They're all pretty young men earlier in their career. But they got together for one of these jam sessions, to end all jam sessions. And you really look at especially someone like Carl Perkins, who's probably the least well-known of them, as really the father of rock and roll in some instances. And I believe Paul McCartney said that there would be no Beatles without Carl Perkins. So so when you go in, who's Carl Perkins? Maybe for someone like of our generation who knows these other names really well, but not him, knows that these four men did so much for the history of music and specifically rock and roll.
All right. Well, let me bring in Nat and Scott. Scott Moreau.
Hi.
Scott, you have performed Johnny Cash in this show on the First National Tour, and you've racked up how many performances?
804. So opening night of...
Should I just call you Johnny?
some people do, so I certainly wouldn't be offended. I actually changed my Siri on my phone. I asked her, she calls me Mr. Cash. So if I asked her, I say, hey Siri, what's my name?
Well, your name is Scott, but because we're friends, I get to call you Mr. Cash.
That's great. So what do you think about this meeting of kind of four geniuses in the same room? Was it an accident? What can you tell us about the real story behind this show?
Sort of a happy accident. Again, we were coming up on the 60th anniversary of that night, December 4th, 1956, which is pretty amazing. It started out as a Carl Perkins recording session there at 706 Union Avenue in Memphis, Tennessee. And Jerry Lee Lewis had been hired as a session piano player and was kind of an upstart, had a bit of recording under his belt on his own, but really was there as a session piano player, not as the star we know him to be now. Elvis was in town to presumably come by and talk to Sam Phillips, who was the owner and the engineer, one of the engineers at the time, to get a royalty check. And once he realized all of those people were there, Sam decided to call Johnny Cash and bring him over. And what happened again was, well, changed rock and roll history, but also was, again, sort of more of a happy accident. I don't think he really intended for them to all sit around and jam, but that's indeed what happened.
Sam Phillips was the center of this. He was the one. He's the guy that brought them all together by degrees of separation.
That's right. Yeah, I mean he discovered all four. I mean, quote unquote, discovered all four of them. Clearly, they all existed before him. But he is the one that, you know, nurtured them, nurtured their talent, really found their sound, and plenty of other people too. I mean, I think people really underestimate Sam Phillips' contribution to rock and roll. I mean, I think now it's becoming more and more evident, as exhibited by the fact that, I don't know if anyone saw in the news, but Leonardo DiCaprio has been cast to play Sam Phillips in a movie about his life. So I think people are really starting to understand exactly what Sam Phillips gave to rock and roll. Not only did he discover these four people, Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis, but he discovered Howlin' Wolf, B.B. King, Conway Twitty, who at the time was, what is his real name? Gordon Jenkins,
Roy Orbison.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to picture the landscape of popular music or rock and roll, or really even country, without Sam Phillips' contribution.
He's why we love the music we love.
Amen.
For people completely unfamiliar with Million Dollar Quartet, and with you directing, you must have gained an appreciation for how the story is put together and the dramatic elements in it. What gets us interested in the story besides just the great music?
Certainly for Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley, I think people have a very clear sort of image of what they think those people were to us. You know, Elvis is, I think it would be very hard for you to find pretty much anyone in this world who has ever looked at a TV screen or listened to music who had no idea who Elvis Presley is. I think everybody worldwide sort of has at least a snapshot of what he sounds like, looks like. They can picture, you know, can picture that iconic image. Cash, similar, maybe sort of less so worldwide. Jerry Lee, certainly, I think, again, most people at least have an idea who he is. Carl Perkins, as we said, unfortunately, lesser known of those four guys. But I think the interesting thing about this show is that we get to show you what they were like in their 20s. I mean, Johnny Cash is the oldest person of the four, and he was 24.
Oh, my gosh.
And so with history now, it's easy to think about, well, when you think about Johnny Cash, maybe you think of Live at Folsom Prison, or you think of, again, Walk the Line, or the Johnny Cash television show from the 70s, right? I mean, most people I know that are, say, my age, maybe a little bit older, that's what they think of. They think of the Johnny Cash television show. But we're talking 20 years before that, when he was certainly not a household name. You know, he had only had two hits out. Elvis had just left Sun to go to RCA at the time, had made his first movie. So he's not the, you know, white jumpsuit standing on the stage at the Hilton in Las Vegas Elvis. He is 22 years old, fresh-faced, you know, barely starting out on his career. And I think that is what draws people in. The ability to kind of show you what it would have been like to stand in that studio and, you know, be sort of an omniscient observer and see what these guys were like in their 20s, because we have a clear idea of what their the breadth of their career is now, but I don't think most people think about what they were like at that point. Again, like Nat being playing Jerry Lee as young as he is, and just, you know, his whole future ahead of him.
Can you Nat add to this conversation about why we care about these characters at
this
time?
Well, you know, it's just like Scott said, everyone kind of has an image in their mind of Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash and, you know, maybe Jerry Lee and Carl separately. But no one ever really thinks about what might happen if they were in the same room together at an age like 19 through 24. You know, Jerry Lee was only 19 years old and he wasn't even 20 when this happened. So to put someone with such an attitude like Jerry Lee, who's just starting out his career, in a room with Elvis Presley, who is just recently the biggest star in the world, to kind of see those different personalities mesh with each other is very entertaining.
And the egos were quite mature at this point, right?
Exactly,
I mean, Jerry Lee, certainly his estimation of his own talent was high.
Absolute, to say the least. You know, Jerry Lee was the type of guy who wanted to meet Elvis Presley just to show Elvis Presley who Jerry Lee was. You know, everyone else wants to meet Elvis Presley to meet Elvis Presley. Jerry Lee says, yeah, I want to meet Elvis Presley, show him that I can do that and better. And then you get someone like Johnny Cash, who maybe is a little bit more soft-spoken, but of course these guys were fighters in their day, and so you start to get these personalities that clash a little bit, and the drama and the stakes start to raise in a way that people maybe were not imagining when listening to the music.
Well, the surprising thing kind of is that they didn't just sort of go, hey, nice see you.
Right.
Yeah, good job with that single, and walk out.
Exactly.
They ended up playing together in the studio.
And of course, with the show, you know, we get the pleasure of telling a story through a little bit of exaggerated dramatization of what actually might have happened in that studio, and, you know, the demons that some of the boys were facing and the problems that they were maybe having with each other, both externally and internally, and all that stuff gets to come to light that, you know, no one has ever really seen portrayed before. But you're right, they came together, and even though sparks were flying in both ways of good chemistry and maybe a little rocky chemistry, they all came together through the music. And that's what's so special about the show, is that no matter what differences they had in their personal lives or their professional lives and their careers, as of course they are all competing against each other, the music was what came out of that night, and everyone still had a great time playing each other's hits and classic gospels and all kinds of great stuff.
Tell me more about the common ground they found. Like, they're all four of them had a go-to playlist that they could share.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't necessarily the cutting-edge, newest stuff, right?
Well, you know, Scott likes to say they were all God-fearing Christians at that time, and they all grew up raised on gospel music and church music, and of course it was this rock and roll music that came along and changed everything for everybody. But but still, at the end of the day, even though they were headlining this new form of music, they all kind of came from very simple roots and gospel roots, and so they all had that in common. That's an easy place to, I mean, for anyone to make music, that's an easy place to start.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't remember, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It was trying to explain to, you know, say, current Western Michigan students, well, there was a time before the internet.
What?
I know, right? But that's another thing about, you know, they do have this common ground with gospel. They also have the other thing that they strangely all have in common. Well, three of the four, All four of the guys have brothers, and at this point in history, three of them have lost those brothers. Johnny Cash's brother Jack was killed when Cash was 12. Jerry Lee's older brother Elmo Jr. died when he was 5. Elvis's twin brother died at childbirth. And Carl's brother is actually in the room with us during the show. But they have that also in common. So they really have a lot kind of connecting them. But again, with the idea that we are seeing them at their beginning stages, we're also seeing rock and roll at its birth. I mean, now it's easy to think about all the bands you love, but realize that at the time, there was no roadmap for rock and roll. There was no, these are the archetypes of American music and rock and roll at that time. I mean, they didn't even really know what to call it then. That's where the term rockabilly came from. I mean, it comes from rockin' hillbillies. And so, so that's another kind of avenue. Like, that's why they are so connected through gospel music, because that's what they grew up with. I mean, they're all, again, they all have a similar background, and they're all come from kind of meager beginnings, poor families, either sharecroppers or people just trying to scrape to get by, like Jerry Lee's dad, you know, selling bootleg hooch to try to make ends meet. And so that was what they were hearing. They were hearing black gospel. They were hearing, you know, they were all working in the fields and hearing what everyone else was singing around them to kind of pass the time. And that shaped the music that they made.
Well, hold that thought, and we'll be back with Scott Moreau and Nat Zegree to talk about Million Dollar Quartet. Guys, we didn't have a chance to consult on music selections this hour, but I have something queued up called Softly and Tenderly. It's from the original recording from the
Excellent.
Sessions.
Excellent.
Of course.
I think we hear it in the show at some point, and we'll hear it now as sung by the Million Dollar Quartet in 1956.
That's a little high, Carl. Just a little bit. Oh, softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling for you and for me. We're on the road who are we? Come home, come home. Well, my Jesus is calling, calling, oh,
bravo, bravo.
We're listening to a very old tape from 1956 with the so-called Million Dollar Quartet, with two members of the cast of Million Dollar Quartet at Farmers Alley Theater. The show begins next Friday, December 2nd, and continues through the 18th, possibly beyond. Scott Moreau is directing, and is Johnny Cash in the show. Nat Zegree is on keyboard and plays Jerry Lee Lewis. And boys, tell me who else is joining you in this quartet and on stage with you.
Well, we have Kyle Jurecic, who is playing the father of rock and roll, Sam Phillips. We have Hanel Heseltine, who is playing Diane, Elvis's girlfriend, which is kind of an amalgamate. She was really actually in the room that night. Her real name is Marilyn Evans, but she was called Diane because at the time, nobody knew who she was. And only in recent years, actually, when the show hit Broadway, was it discovered who this person actually was. So that's an interesting story for later. And then we have Josh White, who plays Elvis Presley. And then also on stage, we have Max Bezanson, who is our bass player, brother Jay, who is Carl Perkins' brother, and Matt, What is Matt's last name?
Smalligan.
That's right, Smalligan. Sorry. I blanked out there for a minute. Matt Smalligan, who plays...
Not bad off the top of your head.
I know. There's Very nothing impressive. In front of me. That actually came to me at 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, he plays Fluke, W.S. Fluke Holland, who is our drummer. And again, everybody, all of those people are real people that were in the room that evening.
And then we have Snake
Osborne. Oh, and Snake Osborne is Carl Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
And Snake Osborne.
Snake Osborne.
Yeah.
Was it Sam Phillips' idea to turn on the tapes or to turn on the platters or discs or whatever it was?
Actually, no. It's a reel-to-reel, essentially. It was actually the idea of Jack Clement, better known as Cowboy Jack, who was brand new to the engineering game at the time. Sam hired him. He wanted to be a disc jockey, among other things. And he was actually the one who had the brilliant idea to turn them on. I mean, it was a Carl Perkins recording session, so the idea was to record Carl. But once everybody sort of showed up and started hanging out, the tapes turned off. And Cowboy Jack, there was actually a sandwich shop next door, which if you ever go to Memphis now, it's the sort of the welcome area / gift shop of Sun Records that you can tour. And he basically was next door eating a sandwich, came over, saw what was going on, moved a couple mics around, turned the tapes on, went back to his sandwich.
Do they still sell sandwiches?
Yeah. I don't believe you can get coffee. Oh, you can get Mexican Coke. They have the real Coke there.
That's all I need.
Coffee, et cetera. And then, you know, a plethora of Sun merchandise.
Rob, you wanted to add something?
Well, yeah. I mean, just as we bring up this cast, because I know these guys are too humble to really speak of their talents. First, Nat's agree on the piano is insane. He does these tricks. He plays blindfolded, backwards, with his feet, with his elbows, with his face probably. I mean, the stuff that he'll pull out is mind-blowing, especially from someone who's taken piano lessons for 10 years when he was a child. The stuff that he can do and just like it's no big deal is really insane. Scott looks and sounds and plays just like Johnny Cash. I mean, he's got the physical mannerisms down completely. Snake Osborne is an amazing guitarist, and he and Max Benson, who's on the bass, they play brothers, just came from another production of Million Dollar Quartet where they were together. So they have this chemistry already soaked in together. Max does amazing things on that bass too. And Matt Smalligan, who is a Western student, an amazing drummer as well, and he's picked up and gotten right in. And then Josh White, who plays Elvis, who was just in our production of 1776 of Farmer's Alley Theater, is kind of getting thrown in to these guys who have played this show before. And I know he was a little intimidated coming through, but we've, you know, dyed his hair jet black like Elvis. He's got the sideburns going. He looks like a young Elvis. It really is insane. And he's catching up and just has moved in seamlessly with the rest of the group. And Hannah Heseltine has an amazing singing voice that she gets to share with us for a couple numbers during the show. So again, the musical talents of these artists is something as far as experience within the show that we haven't had at Farmer's Alley Theater, as far as having played the show before. And when you watch rehearsals, they have this like language and this just like it goes back and forth. I can't really follow everything that they're doing, but they're all just on this level that they're so in sync. And Scott's directing something over here. Matt's working with the musicians over here on something. And then they're like, all right, we're ready to do this. All right, 1, 2, 3. And it sounds like the recording. I'm like, what is going on? It's only day two. So I think Kalamazoo audiences are really, really in for something that they haven't seen before.
Yeah, what is the dialogue talking to music ratio in this show?
It is a Tony nominated book first and foremost, so the script is, you know, it
lists 47 numbers on the cast album.
Sure. The music is primarily the focus of the show.
It,
I mean, of course it is.
Yeah.
But what's great about this show is that, you know, it doesn't really come across as a classic musical theater piece where you have the scene and then I'm going to sing about my emotions, you know? It seamlessly transitions between dialogue and conversation and just starting to jam, because the beautiful thing is that it represents what most recording sessions are, you know? These musicians getting together, and in many ways, music was their language. It was their dialogue and their conversation, you know? They can go in between, and half the time, the dialogue is happening while they're playing music anyway, just because these guys can't help it. They're holding instruments in their hand, and Jerry Lee's going to tickle those ivories, or someone's on the drums, they're going to hit them a little bit, you know. Same thing on the guitars.
A lot of multitasking for the actors.
yes, there is quite a bit of multitasking.
Now,
Scott, is this the easiest directing job you've ever had, or is it a challenge still?
It's a challenge. I mean, I would say mostly for the two of us, it's definitely challenging to do both at once. Mm-hmm. Because I can't just focus on directing or just focus on playing Johnny Cash.
Right.
I think in that sense, the easier thing for me is that I've played Cash a lot, so I don't have to try and find a character through this process. I know who he is. The way he relates with the other people on stage is obviously quite different because, you know, we have a slew of people that I've never worked with before, save Nat. I've done the show with Nat before, but my Cash definitely reacts differently to what I'm given by different actors. But it is certainly a challenge to do both at the same time. It's also, you know, there are certain pitfalls that you can run into with this show. There are also some things that make things easier, i.e. the fact that it's a unit set. There are really no set changes. We are in the actual studio the entire time. We may walk outside to get a breath of fresh air, but really we are in this set, in this one unit set, the entire time. You know, a lot of it just has to do with making sure the audience can see what's going on, that we give appropriate focus to whoever is supposed to be holding that focus at any given time. And really it's about trying to find the truth in everything, trying to find the truth in each scene, and seamlessly work from dialogue into the songs, like Nat was talking about, that it really should never feel like things come to a crashing halt. You know, it should seamlessly go from dialogue into music and back and forth and back and forth to keep the audience engaged. So I think that's somewhat of the challenge at times.
I sense that you feel that responsibility a little bit. And now's the time to learn a little bit more about Scott Moreau. I saw that, I believe you grew up in Maine.
That's right.
You're most identified with playing Johnny Cash in Million Dollar Quartet over 800 times. But what are some of the other landmark roles or productions that meant a lot to you along the way?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, this is definitely, you know, getting the first national tour was definitely a dream come true. I mean, it's certainly worked out well for me for the last almost five and a half years. I've done, honestly, a lot of other great shows. I did actually tour here in Kalamazoo at Miller Auditorium with Million Dollar Quartet, first national tour, about three years ago.
Yeah.
They tend to blend together at this point.
Yeah.
213 cities in
I'm not gonna hold
4 years.
That against you.
I do remember having a nice time here, though. And I remember going to one of the, what brewery was it?
Bell's?
No. I drove by it the other day and I went, I remember going there for somebody's birthday while I was here. But let's see. I don't know. I've done some great. 1776 is actually another one of my favorite shows. I did that in Pennsylvania at the Dutch Apple Dinner Theater. I did a show called Johnny Guitar the Musical twice. It's based on a Joan Crawford movie, 1953.
Oh, yeah.
It's a kind
I've
of
seen
a.
The movie.
It's a terrible and amazing movie at the same time.
Yeah,
Martin Scorsese has held it up as one of the most influential movies on his filmmaking.
Wow.
I love the movie, but it is the dialogue is kind of laughable at times, and the musical turn takes that and uses it to a campy effect. I did that twice in the title role of Johnny Guitar, and that was a lot of fun. I toured with Nebraska Theater Caravan's Christmas Carol for 6 winters, and that was pretty amazing. I've done Christmas Carol, 10 times now? I love Dickens. So
what do you call home now?
I am a nomad. I'm kind of wherever I am. No, I mean, it really just depends. I'm either in New York or I'm at home with my parents in Maine. It really just depends on how much time I have in between jobs. Nat and I just closed our second go-around of Million Dollar Quartet at the Agunquit Playhouse in Maine, which is about an hour and a half south of my parents' house. And we really only had a week off before coming out here to start rehearsals. So I just went home for a bit and then made a little stop in New York and then came out here.
Wow. Nat, we are all so proud that you call Kalamazoo your hometown.
Absolutely.
You grew up here.
I did.
And went off to college at IU?
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, of course, well, one thing I've read about you is you didn't wait for a teacher to show you how to play something. You started just, if I can hear it, I can play it. And that worked out really well.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, I was, first of all, it's wonderful to be back here in my hometown and bringing this production that means so much to me and of course, to be able to be here with Scott, who I've grown so close with over the past year. And for us to be able to bring this back to the place where it all started for me really means a lot. And I'm just very excited to show the people of Kalamazoo this incredible, incredible experience of theater. But I was trained classically growing up by my wonderful piano teacher, Jill Christian, for 11 years, who I believe also taught Mr. Robbie Weiner over here for a little bit. So I was trained classically, and that was really what I played mostly growing up until I started realizing, well, you know, let's try and figure out a couple of these other styles of music. You know, I was a Disney kid, without a doubt, and I started to listen to all the Disney music and then started to listen to all the classic film scores by people like John Williams and Leonard Bernstein, and I became captivated with that style of composing. And of course, it was all kind of based on classical anyway. And so with the influence from both my parents being wonderful musicians, both in the pop and rock sort of world, and then the jazz and sort of classic Motown era world, I kind of got this great little encyclopedia growing up of different styles. And somewhere along the way, I realized that, yes, I could use my ear to hear these different melodies and translate them to the piano without necessarily using too much sheet music. But either way, having the training that I did so young was without a doubt the best base and platform that any musician could ask for. I mean, it was extremely helpful to be able to start with the old guys, the original bad boys like Beethoven and Mozart and Bach. And then somewhere along the way, you know, we'll listen to this recording of Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, listen to the Temptations, listen to Jerry Lee and Elvis and all these great guys that started to turn the game around. And when I got the first opportunity to really try some of this Million Dollar Quartet music, it was before I had even had my first audition for the show, and I learned how to play Great Balls of Fire.
This was back at Indiana University?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, this was back at IU before while I was still there, and I learned Great Balls of Fire and taught myself that, and that was very fun, but I actually didn't really know how to play any of the other songs. And I'll never forget at my first audition for the show after I'd moved to New York for Hunter Foster, the director that Scott and I work with, he asked me to play Great Balls of Fire, and that I did. And he asked me to play A Whole Lot of Shaking Going On after that. I said, oh, I don't know how to play that one. He said, okay, well, how about another Jerry Lee hit? Can you do A Wild Child? And I said, oh, I don't know how to play that one either. And but luckily for me, I had heard the person before me in the room play Wild Child. And I listened to his version. And so when I came in and Hunter said, can you play Wild John? I said, no, I can't. But if I had to take a guess, it sounded like this. And I ended up making up my very own version of Wild Child and playing the song to the best of my ability. And I think it worked out pretty well. But that's my favorite way to play music, is to hear it and then take it into my own mind and play what I feel it should sound like. And
we're going to continue this story in a few minutes. I'll take a break, though, to hear some Jerry Lee Lewis, the original, playing a song that is featured in the show, I believe, called Brown Eyed Handsome Man. Again, Million Dollar Quartet opens at Farmers Alley Theater on Friday, December 2nd. That's a week from tomorrow, Friday, and continues now through December 18th. You may get lucky and we'll see them stay a bit longer, but you'll have to check out the availability right now at farmersalleytheater.com. That's theater spelled with an R-E at the end. Jerry just wants to keep playing, doesn't he?
You can't stop him once he starts.
He really, yeah. We're talking with Nat Zagree and Scott Moreau about Million Dollar Quartet. And Nat, you were in the middle of telling us about moving to New York. And you've played Jerry Lee Lewis over 100 times in more than one production.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw that, you know, you're based in New York now.
Yes.
Or the New York area.
Mm-hmm. In the city.
Wow, nice. You have a residency with your own show somewhere, or have a planned residency?
Well, it's not necessarily a residency, but I guess it's more of a consistency that I am,
regular gig.
Yeah, sure. That I am honored to be able to do. You know, I do a fair amount of music directing out in the city of different cabarets and shows around the island at some great places like 54 Below and the Laurie Beachman and Joe's Pub and the Cutting Room and Don't Tell Mama's another fun one. And I've been lucky to work with some incredible people and make a lot of great friends and these incredibly talented people who are so good at what they do. And I'm just happy to be at the keys and help guide them a little bit as we put these shows together. But then I also do my own shows that I have.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a struggle? Because you can also do all the things they do.
No, not at all. Because one of my favorite parts about my job is the people that I do get to work with. You know, it's such an honor to be able to sit and listen to far more talented people than I ever could be, and to listen to them do their thing with just as much passion as anybody else in this business is such a treat, because not only then do I get to sit there and listen to them and work with them as my job, but I get to call these people some of my best friends, and you know, we finish our work and then we go out and then we have the whole city to do whatever we want, of course, but but to be able to call going to work, you know, going to a studio and playing some great music and listening to these incredibly talented people sing. And then, of course, being able to bring that music to the public and have these wonderful shows is a dream come true in many ways. And of course, I do enjoy being on the stage and that side of my performing career, but I'm always happy just to be behind the table too. You know, it doesn't really matter whether I'm seen or not, as long as the audience is having a good time.
I think you've been in the recording studio recently.
I have.
As well?
Yes, this past year I've been working on and completed my debut album, which is called Fly More Than You Fall. And it is out and available. It just came out just about 2 months ago, I guess. What is it, November?
Rob's going to say.
And if you come to Million Dollar Quartet, you're going to have the opportunity to, this is a plug for you, Nat, to purchase Nat's CD, as well as Scott has a Johnny Cash tribute CD.
Which is awesome.
That will also be available. And they're going to be in the lobby, you know, after the show. And
you might want to take them home.
Yeah, if you want to take Scott and Nat home with you, ladies and gentlemen, that's completely will be available for you at the theater.
Yes, we can fit in your very own pocket. But so that was an incredible experience to be able to work on this past year.
Is it original songs?
Yes, it's all original music. It's all original songs that I've written both by myself and a couple songs I co-wrote lyric-wise with my writing partner that I work with in New York, Mr. Eric Holmes, who is one of my very best friends. And we write our musicals together and different songs and work on assorted projects together. We just finished the first industry reading of our newest musical that in New York. And that was happening in between the week that we closed our show and when I came here. And it was great. But yeah, the album is all original music. And if I had to kind of plug it with any sort of theme, I would say that it is based out of optimism and hope.
Yeah,
for
the title reflects that.
Sure, and yeah. for a better world and a better life of people just getting along a little bit more, which in my personal opinion, I think the world could use a bit more of these days. We are in some pretty untreaded waters, I would say, and just to be able to escape a little bit with some music that hopefully just makes you smile. That's always my goal. Just if I can get a smile out of you, then consider my job done.
I consider my job done when I bring the pathos to the to the public radio.
There you go.
Thank right. you for that.
Of course.
Well, let's get back to the show.
Yeah.
How long is it? How fast does it go by?
Well, hopefully
in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. well, we're just kind of starting to, which is crazy. We've only been in rehearsal for a week and a day, and we are, you know, we've been running the show. It's going to be about 2 hours with with the intermission. I mean, again, having done it 800 times, most people I talk to after the show say, you know, I can't believe it went by so fast, and I wish it was still going, and I wish you could have done, you know, 10 more songs. I would have sat there all day. So hopefully that's what people leave with, and I think they will. You know, it goes relatively quickly because we are, you know, we never really stop. Yes, there is an intermission, but it's not... There's not a whole lot of downtime. We are out there rocking it out the entire time we're out there.
Is it preordained that I'm going to leave the theater with one particular favorite, or can that change?
Ooh.
Well,
one favorite song or one
favorite performer? Oh. Yeah, character.
I think this will maybe make our Sam Phillips Kyle happy if I reference Harry Potter. I feel like what most people sort of leave, you know, Team Cash, Team Elvis, Team Jerry Lee, Team Carl. I feel like people do have their own favorites, and it might not be who you come in expecting to like,
because you already know their material.
Exactly.
Well, and that's the other thing too. Speaking about the tempo of the show, you know, every single song that comes, or almost every one, is a hit, you know, is a hit that everybody in the audience will recognize. So there's almost this fun little game of, oh, which one's going to come to, oh, is this going to be Walk the Line? Oh, is this going to be Great Balls of Fire? You know, and so everyone is kind of on the edge of their seat thinking, look, we know Elvis is about to sing a song. Could this be Hound Dog? No. Oh, okay. Well, could this be that? Yes. And there it is. And then, of course, you're into the song. And once the song's done, you're on to the next one. And so it really does come by you pretty quickly. But I'd have to say, if people walk out of the show Who knows? You might be Team Diane when you walk out, you know? Yeah. Hannah's got an incredible voice representing the wonderful musical theater program here at Western Michigan University that is, you know...
It's a resource for all the theaters.
Absolutely, pumping out some great performers and just saw their production of Showboat, which was just so show and boaty. And no, it was lovely.
Eloquently said, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Well, I would say the audience... This is Rob again. I would say the audiences, when you're coming down, we don't want them to be the typical audiences that have their programs neatly folded in their laps and have, you know, will applaud appropriately, you know, when a song is finished. And I'm sure that Scott Neck and, you know, have a testament to this, that this is kind of like a rock concert. And I'm sure they can speak to audiences that have gone wild, that are singing along with them, that are dancing in the aisles and in the rows, you know, people throwing garments of clothes up on stage. I know you've probably got, you know, a bunch of groupies in Maine and all over the country now, probably for Scott, that are, this is something that audiences, yeah, we want you to come and have a real, real good time.
I seem to recall one performance at the finale when I was about to start the finale of the show, and the audience was up on their feet and dancing, and I literally into the microphone said, "Sit down, you're gonna miss it." And they yelled back at me, said, "No, we can't.
I'm not sitting down.
We don't want to." And so it's so true. People will get so into the show, and rightfully so. It is a rock concert. It's a great time for everyone to come in and let that rock and roll take over a little bit.
And as we were talking about escapism, and Rob was saying, you know, again, with some perhaps turbulent times, the only president you need to worry about is Dwight D. Eisenhower, because he was the president in 1956. So you can come in and just not worry about any of that. Just let yourself go. Again, you know, it really is, the show in general is about escapism and taking people back to, again, a simpler time. There are nice little love letters throughout, kind of talking about the time period, whether it be the price of gas, the price of bread, who's president. You know, there are nice little love letters that I think most people will get, you know, references to Ed Sullivan, to Dean Martin. And I think it really just does bring people back to a simpler time, maybe a better time, mm-hmm. depending on who you are.
It seems like one.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And of course, what was I going to say? I'm sorry, I interrupted a perfectly good ending statement.
Not at all.
You totally had me heading straight to the news. We have 3 minutes left. And 1956, again, if you're lucky enough to have tickets to the Sunday show, you'll be watching Million Dollar Quartet on the 60th anniversary of this historic meeting.
That's right. And there are just a few tickets left. So if you are interested, and I hope you are, please join us at FarmersAlleyTheater.com for tickets. You can purchase them online. You can also call our box office, 343-2727. We have a social media presence. Find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. I've been taking some videos at rehearsal that we're going to be posting up, you know, brief little snippets to whet your appetite for the show. And just the amount of talent that we have on that stage. Sometimes you have great singers and sometimes you have great musicians, but these performers are all both, and actors as well. I mean, they all have to be actors. So it really is a triple threat kind of instance that we have with these eight artists.
Real quick, Rob, when do you come back in 2017?
Well, this is sort of a first official announcement. The city has done construction on the street Farmers Alley that they have not completed. Even though the street is paved over, but they have to go back and finish the work that they started, because we thought it was going to be a project for X amount of months. Turns out it's going to be X plus X amount of months. Mm. So they're going to have to tear up the street again in March. Actually, Farmers Alley Theater is going to be staying its residency over at the Little Theater through the conclusion of the 2016-17 season at the very least. Yeah. So, I mean, we're very excited to work with Weston about that. So although we were going to come back downtown for our next production, The Toxic Avenger, in February. We'll actually be performing that and the rest of our schedule down at the Little Theater. And tickets for Toxic Avenger, which I'm directing, are on sale now. And that's a real campy, fun musical. We're the first company in the region to produce it. It just became available to license. It's from David Bryan and Joe DiPietro, people that wrote Memphis, who won the Tony for that. He's from Bon Jovi. It's rock and roll, but of a campy variety, similar something to, you know, something maybe like Bat Boy or You're in Town, or if you love the Trailer Park shows that we've done here, it's a riot. So I want to put in a quick plug for that, and then the rest of our great season as well.
Well, Deputy Director Rob, thank you so much for coming to WMUK. And men, thank you for talking and giving us the behind the scenes of Million Dollar Quartet on top of everything that you're in charge of. Have a great run.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for
thank
having
you for
us.
Having us. Whoa, Jinx.
Yeah, well, it happens a lot. Give it to me.